WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump said to be wanting nearly $250 million from his own Justice Department. Here's ABC's Rachel Scott.
Sources tell ABC News that President Trump is pushing for a personal $230 million payout from the Justice Department as compensation for the federal investigations he's faced.
Well, I guess they probably owe me a lot of money for that.
That money would ultimately come from American taxpayers. The president, now in charge of the department that investigated him for allegations of Russian meddling in the 2016 election and mishandling of classified documents in 2022.
The president's pick to head up the Office of Special Counsel Paul Ingrassia has withdrawn his name after many of his text messages were found to be offensive. Long lines outside the Louvre this morning as the famous museum opened its doors to the public for the first time since the robbery of many of France's crown jewels. The wing they were housed in does remain closed. This is ABC News.
For 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney is making another run at Wisconsin Attorney General. Toney's been the District Attorney of Fond du Lac County since 2012. He was also the former president of the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association. Toney says his top priorities include addressing the fentanyl crisis, changing crime lab practices, and targeting violent crime in Milwaukee. Toney ran for AG in 2022, losing to Josh Call by a narrow 1.3% margin. Call has also announced that he will seek re-election. This week is National Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Week, dedicated to educating people about the dangers of lead poisoning, especially in small developing children. Winnebago County Public Health Nurse Jane Tebon.
So lead poisoning is considered an invisible disease. You don't know your child has lead. But what it can do is, again, it can hurt their brain and nervous system. And they may not show any symptoms, but it affects them maybe years down the road when they're in school and they have trouble focusing.
Tebon said in 2024, 80 children in Winnebago County had elevated lead levels. Anyone with an older home built before 1978 and young children should have a lead risk assessment. In Winnebago County, the Department of Public Health is holding a presentation Thursday at 10 a.m. to discuss the Lead Safe Homes program. See our story at WISS.fm for details. Schnuck Markets has announced it's completed the purchase of Festival Foods and Hometown Grocers. The three supermarket brands will now be part of the 1939 group based in St. Louis. Festival Food Stores will continue operating under their current name and will keep their employees and continue supporting the same community initiatives. Officials did not disclose the financial terms of the sale. I'm Lisa Hale for 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News.
The Packers prepare for Pittsburgh. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, it's the Packers and the Steelers this week on Sunday Night Football. But head coach Matt LaFleur reminding us they're playing the Steelers, not Aaron Rodgers.
They're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, who happen to have Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it's as simple as that. That is for you guys to talk about. We've got a lot of respect and love for Aaron. I mean, what he's done here is a Hall of Famer. This game is not about that. It's about going to Pittsburgh, Sunday Night Football. Our guys will be jacked up. It's about the Green Bay Packers versus the Pittsburgh Steelers.
NBA, it's the Bucks against the Wizards tonight in Milwaukee and the debut of Miles Turner and what role he'll play on the Bucks this season.
As a center, you know, as an anchor in the back part of defense, it's like, what you're supposed to do? The feedback has been phenomenal. It's like, you know, you're right, I don't even realize when I'm doing it. They're saying, yo, we need more of that. You know, it's not something we've had, you know, consistently in the past. Like, we need a voice. We need someone to always, like, step up and speak. So I'm just taking it on.
That's the Bucks' Miles Turner with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to WISS, the Fox Valley's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Cloudy, blustery, and raw today with a few scattered light showers. Highs only in the upper 40s. For tonight, gradually decreasing clouds, breezy and chilly with lows in the upper 30s. On Thursday, mostly sunny skies, still chilly, highs right around 50. Currently, it's 44.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
A very funny stand-up comic, Mr. Mike Toomey. The last time I saw a Goldie Hawn film in the theater, the male lead was giving her a foot massage, yeah. And it was the worst foot foot I've ever seen. I actually said out loud, I went, ew. And my aunt started cracking up.
Yeah, maybe they could have had a stand-in, like a stunt foot. Or
please,
something.
Even if it's a guy's foot, I don't care.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
Governor Evers has sounded the alarm. 700,000 Wisconsinites might lose emergency food assistance. We discuss with Amanda Martinez and William Park Sutherland of Kids Forward. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And good morning. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north. It's 7:06 on a Wednesday morning, October 22nd. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison, A2. Ellie Bordeaux, Up North News newsletter editor, joining us in just a sec. And then we'll also be talking this hour to the president of the Viroqua School Board about the school funding system in the state. It stinks. That includes this new state budget, where the best Republicans would agree to with Governor Tony Evers was some additional school funds in some parts of the budget, but basically a 0% increase in general state aid, and inflation's not 0%. So that's making it harder for school districts to avoid another round of referendums. And so we'll talk about the system. We've got Civic Media sports editor Jimmy Cuska coming up. And then looking ahead at 8:35, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us. Normally she's here Mondays and Fridays, but is going to join us because yesterday there was a virtual press conference with a bipartisan group of Wisconsin lawmakers working on legislation that would increase access to resources and education about menopause. And they were joined by actress Halle Berry, who has been a menopause activist, trying to get people to learn more about symptoms, treating them, research, things like that. And so we'll play back some of her remarks and talk to Dr. Lyerly about that from the standpoint of an OBGYN. That, again, coming up at 8:35. Temperatures around the state right now range from 37 degrees in Manitowish Waters and Solon Springs to 48 degrees in Shawano. Pretty much all of Wisconsin is at some point in the mid-40s right now. It's 41 here in Chippewa Falls. And again, things will be getting a bit more seasonable for temperatures after today's last shot of a little bit of rain before things move out of the area and we get some pleasant weather for the rest of the week. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy with showers and 43. We got about a tenth of an inch of rain overnight. He says it felt like November with a high of 43 and a wind chill of 38 for much of the day yesterday. Says he has a meeting in Shawano today and some errands to run. It may be one of the first times that Rob has not talked about mowing, although I don't doubt that he, like us here, still has some mowing jobs, mostly to grind up the leaves and mulch them up and get them out of the way. But again, you know, we've got temperatures in the mid-40s by and large around Wisconsin. So stay inside, pour yourself a cup of coffee, and read up on that Up North News daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Ellie Bordeaux puts it together for us and joins us now on Wednesday mornings. Ellie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you guys?
That's good. It's nice to see you. It's nice to have you here today talking about the things that you put in. And let's start with something local that you asked people to submit ideas or photos about, and that would be pizza places in their area. And I get the feeling a lot of people, if they've got a place they really like, there's like a sense of pride. They want to tell you about it. How was the response?
Yes, absolutely. I love getting responses. I love our Locals Love section because it allows us to highlight some small businesses around the state, those kinds of things. But I do think that is very true. People have a lot of pride in their pizza places around the state. I got so many emails and so many responses of people saying, this is the best pizza place in the state. This is so great. You need to check this out. So many recommendations. We've got some from Fond du Lac, Janesville, Eau Claire. So we every Friday have a different locals love section. And last week was pizza. This upcoming week, we're doing burgers. So be sure to send those in. I want to hear about your best burger places. I want to know where to check out around the state. So it's really great.
I'm guessing, as I was looking at some of the reviews, like Paul here says about Wisco's in Eau Claire, it's what I like to call the most Wisconsin place I've ever been to. There is also axe throwing, which is also very fun. Their Midwest deep dish pizza is the absolute best. I am not aware of any place, Paul, other than that place that combines pizzas and axe throwing. I'm still not really sure how we've allowed axe throwing in public places like restaurants, but was that one of the more unusual ones that you saw of everything that was put in?
Yeah, I would say that one was a little bit more unusual. I have also never heard of the combination of axe throwing and pizza in the same place, but hey, to each their own. And if it works, it works. So yeah. I like it.
There was Harry's Prohibition Bistro in Sheboygan that said the moment you walk in and smell the wood-fired pizza oven and the 1920s decor brings you back in time. My favorite is the walnut pizza with Italian sausage. The burst of cream cheese with each bite adds an extra great flavor. From Merrill. Merrill is the person who submitted this. That's new on so many levels. The walnut, the cream cheese. I'm sure you heard some other interesting flavor combinations in pizza.
Yeah, we've got another one from Elkhart Lake about a beef marsala pizza. That's something that's I have never heard of before, but hey, sounds great. That sounds like something I need to check out. So I'm interested.
So not only can we talk about the local pizza places, but the different pizza combinations. And before we get going with folks here, when we talk about pizza combinations, you don't have to send in the Hawaiian one, the right. Ham and the pineapple. That's right up there with candy corn. It's going right into the garbage can.
No,
just Parker, come on, man.
You're killing me.
I can't say I agree with that either.
So y'all can have whatever weird takes you want, but I want to hear them. We've already heard that one. We've heard that one to death. But now we're hearing these new ones. A beef marsala. I've heard of chicken marsala, but beef marsala pizza. And then you've got the walnut pizza with Italian sausage and a little bit of cream cheese. So what else we got out there? I definitely invite comments coming out. Oh, no, not Tony, too. Tony, pineapple was made for pizza.
Oh, no.
Oh, Tony. God, we're going to miss you and all your comments you used to send to us. Anyway, so now that I've opened up that can of sardines or whatever else you like on your pizza, people have really taken to it. What are you looking for next?
So we're looking for burgers next. So this Friday, we're going to be featuring your favorite burger spots. I want to hear them. Send them in. Send us some unique burgers that you have seen around the state. What are some weird flavor combinations that maybe you wouldn't think about? Kind of like a beef marsala pizza. What would be the equivalent of that to a burger?
I will say that in the Madison area, one of the things I miss is at the Great Dane. And the Great Dane has a burger patty and a brat patty. And then, like I think it's fried onions and something else. And it's on a pretzel bun. And I might have to leave and drive down to Madison for lunch. That's just, I miss it so much. Yeah. Got a couple of great places up in Eau Claire. There's the Amber Inn. Again, just this little tiny corner bar, but just amazing burgers off their little griddle there behind the bar. Corton House makes great burgers too. So yeah, we definitely want everybody else's favorites. Ellie, you got a favorite in the Oconomowoc area?
I'm trying to think. I would say, honestly, my favorite is probably, I would say the most unique is Crafty Cow in Oconomowoc. They've got like a peanut butter burger, which is interesting. But I know it sounds weird, but it works. So they have a location, I believe, in Milwaukee as well. But yeah, I would say Crafty Cow is like our biggest spot in Oconomowoc for burgers. But I do think too, it's like kind of the smaller underground places that also sometimes have the best, you know, like you don't expect it, but for some reason it's the best.
You know? No, you know, you remind me that also in downtown Eau Claire, the Livery has a unique burger. I haven't had it for a bit, but I know that there's like some pepper jelly that's on it. And I forget what kind of cheese is on there. Parker, anything from a Whitewater standpoint?
There is a place in Whitewater that has a peanut butter burger. I can't remember what it is. I think it's at Fat Jack's. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Fat Jack's. There you go.
Okay. So there you go. We want your burger places. We want to know exactly what it is that makes them so good, the weird flavor combinations. We'll definitely take it all. Here's one from the livery. It's gorgonzola cheese and a bacon onion balsamic jam. A bacon onion balsamic jam with arugula on a brioche bun.
Ooh, now, that sounds good.
It is. I'd rather have the pretzel, but I am not. Brioche to me is like too sweet for a hamburger bun. Mm. I want that as like, you know, French toast. That brioche is the best for that.
That's
really
fair.
Really went into food talk here today, didn't we?
Okay, well, I guess so.
Talked about pizza. We've talked about burgers. Let's talk about fish, but we're not eating these ones because they're made of paper. So.
Oh.
Right. Yeah. So in July, people from around the world participated with the Sierra Club of the Wisconsin chapter, and they set the world record for the largest display of origami fish ever created, with 86,262 origami fish. And so the display was set up in the Urban Ecology Center in Milwaukee, with each one with a message to shut down Line 5. And so now that display is moving to the state capitol, moving to Madison. So they're looking for volunteers to help with setup. They're looking for help with preparing for the display. They're looking for people to come attend the press conference. That'll be later. So all that information is in the newsletter as well. It's just a big message for state lawmakers of a call to shut down Line 5. So that's why they've done that.
We had that in our on the radio show and in the newsletter back in May, as by setting this world record for collecting origami fish, they could call attention to Enbridge's Line 5, how they want to reroute it around the Bad River Reservation. But the tribal community is like, well, yeah, you can go around it, but you're still putting a pipeline through the Bad River, you know, watershed. And so the court fights go on all of that. And so this was their way of calling attention. They had a website, fishforfuture.org, again, fishforfuture.org, where you can read more about the collection and everything they want to do now to display it. So a nice little follow-up on there. And then finally, Ellie, you've got a new feature called Civic Check-In. As we described it in the last hour, there's a lot of big words out there: authoritarianism, fascism, oligarchy, things like that. And they sound like, you know, unattainable, but it really is important in this day and age to brush up on these terms, because they demonstrate, you know, that there's some real threats to democracy and freedom in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we wanted to include this section, is a lot of these words are being thrown around a lot more recently. And some of these words, I would say people maybe haven't heard since high school, like since their high school civics class, you know? And so I think it's important for all of us to brush up on our knowledge of different political words and understanding what it means for you in your daily life. Are these patterns that you're seeing now, like being able to come to recognize those in your own way and that kind of thing. So today we focused on an oligarchy and talking about the different types of oligarchies, what that means, the patterns to recognize. So every week we take a different type of term and kind of define it, go in depth with it, and then ask for your thoughts on what do you see in our day and age now.
And I think that's a great thing to do, because, again, words can get thrown about without having them be technically correct. For me, the most glaring example are all the folks on the political right who love to scream socialism, that this is socialist, clearly demonstrating that they're not completely grasping what socialism actually means, but they love to throw out that big word. Well, if people are going to be saying that things are perhaps similar to an oligarchy or fascist, it might be important to, again, brush up on what it means to see that in that context, those words are being correctly used right now, unlike socialism over the past, you know, decade or two. So to read more about that and everything else that Ellie Bordeaux puts together, head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe up in the top banner. Ellie, thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good one.
Yep, you as well. Appreciate it very much. Let's take a look at sports now at 7:19, where, again, we've got just one little note I wanted to pass along. The Packers taking on Aaron Rodgers at Pittsburgh Sunday at 7:20. Pregame starting at 5 on several Civic Media stations. A homeroom segment is coming up in 15 minutes. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
From Oshkosh to Nina, this is 98.3 WISS.
It's time for Eye on the Community on WISS, sponsored by Inside Eye Care, serving the Fox Valley since 1972 with comprehensive eye care services. Find them on North Sawyer Street in Oshkosh and Chain Drive in Appleton. Their goal is to improve lives by improving sight with quality eye care for everyone in your family. Inside Eye Care. Visit WIinsight.com to schedule your eye exam today. Now, here's what's happening in our area. Fox City's Roller Derby presents Monsters Brawl at Oshkosh Arena November 1st. Get ready for a spine-chilling showdown as the fiercest roller derby skaters in the Midwest bring holy terror to the track in this special Halloween-themed bout. Costumes encouraged, screams guaranteed. And New Game, Northeast Wisconsin Game-a-Palooza, is holding their 2025 annual convention at the Culver Family Welcome Center November 7th and 8th, with tables full of role-playing, board gaming, miniatures, and a whole lot more. This has been your Eye on the Community, brought to you by Insight Eye Care. If it's happening in the Oshkosh area, it's on WISS.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons, like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Seems like nobody in America agrees on much of anything these days.
But can we agree the federal government shouldn't tax people into poverty?
If you work full-time, you should be able to afford your basic needs. Don't you think? We're the Patriotic Millionaires.
We believe your full-time job should cover what it costs to live. We think your first $45,000 of income should be tax-free.
And multimillionaires?
We should pay more to fund your tax cut. Go to first45taxfree.com to learn more. A working-class tax cut paid for by millionaires. That's an idea we can all agree on.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale with WISS, and it's time for Valley Focus. Today, I have folks from the Winnebago County Public Health Department here. We're talking a little bit about lead, because this week is National Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Week. And Jane Tebon, who is a public health nurse with Winnebago County, joins me today. How are you?
Hi, Lisa. I'm good.
Excellent. So we're going to talk a little bit with your partner in crime over there, Holly Glassford, in just a moment. But before we talk about, you know, what we can do to avoid lead poisoning, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the problem of lead poisoning. It affects children specifically more than, say, adults. But what are you seeing when it comes to lead poisoning? Is that still a fact? Is it still a problem in the United States today?
So, yes, lead poisoning does affect children more than adults, particularly children under 6 years of age, because their brain is developing very quickly and it can affect their brain and nervous system. And they are exposed a lot more readily than adults because they do a lot more hand-to-mouth activity and play on the floor and have exposure to lead paint that's deteriorated.
Now, you mentioned lead paint, and that takes me back so many years because I hate to admit how old I am, but I do remember when lead paint chips were the big thing that people were talking about constantly in the 70s. And there was a commercial with a little child reaching out and grabbing a paint chip. So is that where we're seeing the lead poisoning in children nowadays, or does it come from a different source?
So yes, that's one of the sources, is physically putting lead paint chips in their mouth, and probably more so from lead dust. Lead dust is invisible. You can't see it, but when old windows, for an example, are going up and down, that friction creates lead dust that lands on the windowsill or blows into the floor. Children touch the sill or the floor. Toys maybe are there too, and they go in the mouth. So in addition to putting deteriorated chipped paint, that lead dust also is a big impact that can raise their level.
What about in water?
There's lots of properties in Winnebago County that still have lead service lines. So yes, water that goes through these lead service lines could have lead in the water. If they don't have lead pipes, their water should be fine.
Okay. All right. What happens when a child gets lead poisoning or is exposed to lead? What is it that actually happens?
So lead poisoning is considered an invisible disease. You don't know your child has lead. But what it can do is, again, it can hurt their brain and nervous system. And they may not show any symptoms at all, but it affects them maybe years down the road when they're in school and they have trouble focusing, learning. And that's when maybe you see some signs of the history of lead poisoning.
I see. So this isn't something that you would notice right away. You know, little Connie takes a piece of lead paint, a chip, puts it in her mouth, is exposed. But you wouldn't know at that point that Connie's going to have a problem. It's later on down the line?
Usually. Sometimes when levels get a bit high, yes, they can be irritable or they have poor appetite or behavior problems. But generally you don't see that. So it's important to have the children tested. And testing should occur twice under the age of six, at 12 months and at 24 months. And if they don't get tested then, they should be tested once between age 3 and 5 years.
And how do they get tested?
So it's usually done at the doctor's office at an appointment. It's a simple blood test where they poke your finger, just a tiny amount of blood. And that is a capillary lead level, and that's a screening. If that's elevated, they go back for another blood test to confirm it.
Okay. So a couple of blood tests through your primary care physician, or through, will it go through the county, or is it through primary care physicians specifically?
So both. They can go to their doctor, and the doctor will send an order to lab. If that isn't an option, we can do it at the WIC office.
Oh, okay, great. So there's lots of ways to get tested and get to make that step to make sure that your children are safe. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Is there anything else about lead poisoning and National Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Week you want to mention that we haven't clicked on yet?
Well, just that, what the health department does. So when we have a case that's reported to us that's above 3.5, that's where a public health nurse does a home visit to the parents, and we provide education on different ways that they can help lower the lead level. And then our environmental health team does an investigation to determine where the cause of that child's lead exposure occurred.
How many children were exposed to lead in the county, say, last year? Let's look at 2024 specifically.
So in 2024, we had 80 children that had a lead level of 3.5 or above.
That seems like a lot of children to me, as somebody who's heard about lead poisoning all of her life. I mean, from the time I was a child on up. But this is something that is still a problem in Winnebago County.
Oh, most definitely. We have a lot of old properties. We have a lot of rental properties. And so sometimes, there's some deterioration that occurs and puts the child at risk. But one thing to mention is there's been more screening happening too, which is a good thing. So we're catching a lot more children with elevated lead levels.
Okay. And how come there's more screening? Is it just because it's now a natural thing to do to screen more, or?
Yeah. January of 2024, Wisconsin DHS recommended that all children get screened at 12 months and 24 months. All children, no matter where they live, in an old house or not. Before that, it was just focused on children that live in older homes or frequent an older home.
Well, I know even in Milwaukee, there's that big problem with one of the schools had lead, and some children were exposed to lead through the pipes at a Milwaukee school. So it could come not just from your home, but from industrial buildings as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Jane Tebon, thank you very much. We will be back with more on National Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Week and Winnebago County Public Health in just a little bit. This is Valley Focus on WISS.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to WISS, the Fox Valley's home to the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
You want to talk giant pumpkins in Wisconsin? There is an entire group of growers dedicated to capturing the title. I'm PM Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. More stories about how giant pumpkins are grown in the state. That's on the way next.
How does a soybean become a Dairyland seed difference maker? It starts in the labs of Corteva Agriscience, where Enlist E3 technology is designed to fight the toughest weeds for the greatest yield potential. Then it's hand-selected by Dairyland seed agronomists to be the ideal fit for Midwestern soils and conditions. Finally, it's tested on acres by farmers like you to ensure it's proven to outperform. It's a long road, but the only way to make a difference. Find your soybean difference maker at DairylandSeedSoybeans.com.
This year, Jim Ford, a giant pumpkin grower from Fond du Lac, actually ended up topping the competition with his pumpkin that weighed in at 2,491 pounds. He's not alone when it comes to trying to grow those giant pumpkins. Thomas Motzma is from Brandon nearby, and he's been growing competitive giant pumpkins for over a decade. And he said, while you may be impressed with the size, it takes a lot of time and effort to get them that big.
And then they'll go out in the garden late April to early May, all depending on, you know, what kind of spring we have. A lot of growers now will put them in mini, mini tents or mini greenhouses, 5x10. 10 by 20. And then before we set that, we'll have hitting cables usually dug in the ground. And then they get transplanted outdoors, like I said, late April, early May. And then they get the TLC from the greenhouse until they get big enough where the greenhouse will have to be taken off.
Thomas Motzma from the Brandon area explaining a little bit more about the dedication that has to go in to producing the giant pumpkins you're hearing about at this time of the year. He said, in Wisconsin, the giant pumpkin growers are always working towards a pumpkin that weighs 3,000 pounds, or maybe better.
At Steffes Auctioneers, we don't just sell, we guide. Knowing what your equipment or land is worth isn't just a number, it's clarity. It's the first step in making smart decisions for your future. That's why we offer honest, market-based valuations with no pressure to sell. Just insight you can trust. Start with the conversation or start with the valuation. Steffes Auctioneers. We don't just sell, we guide. Not sure where to start? Let's talk. Visit steffesgroup.com right now. That's steffesgroup.com.
Maybe you've got one of those giant pumpkins we were talking about. We'd love to see a picture. You can send it to us through our brand new Midwest Farm Report app. Download it. Available for both Apple and Android. Midwest Farm Report. And start using and interacting with us today. That's a look at food news. I'm PM Yonke.
WISS, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. And home for the Todd Allball Show. Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Cloudy, blustery, and raw today with a few scattered light showers. Highs only in the upper 40s. For tonight, gradually decreasing clouds, breezy and chilly with lows in the upper 30s. On Thursday, mostly sunny skies, still chilly, highs right around 50. Currently, it's 44.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio.
On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Robert Kennedy Jr. says America is under-babied. What can we do to encourage more Americans to become parents? Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Nice to have you back at 7:35 on this Wednesday morning. Now, there are local news updates throughout the course of our show here, 6 to 9 weekdays on the Civic Media Radio Network. But even as those local updates are happening on most stations, we continue yammering over here from Chippewa Falls and Madison. And if you'd ever like to listen into the show that way or watch what we're doing, there's always the Civic Media app where you can tune into one of the other stations that continues to play the network feed. You can certainly watch what we do on YouTube or Facebook. That would be the Up North News Facebook or YouTube pages, or the Civic Media YouTube and Facebook pages. Or you can sign up for us as a podcast. Head over to Spotify or Apple and follow the program that way. And you'll never miss a minute of what it is that we are talking about over here on weekday mornings, like at 7:35, 7:36 now, on Wednesday morning for our homeroom segment when we talk about public education in Wisconsin and, you know, its many positive qualities and the many threats that are out there from privatization, from people playing politics with our schools, people playing politics with school funding in our state. We have a state funding system that is much more convoluted than it needs to be. And each session of the legislature, every 2 years when they write a new state budget, they try to work around the system as best they can. And in this last state budget, legislative Republicans and Democratic Governor Tony Evers finally reached a deal, but it is a deal that is not exactly sitting well with a large number of school districts that are not seeing much of an increase in general state aids. They're seeing some increased dollars in other parts of the budget, like special education. But on the whole, they're still having a tough time keeping up with inflation, conceivably leading to another record round of school referendums across the state. So joining us to talk more about it is the president of the school board in Viroqua, Angie Lawrence, who was also part of a news conference last week with some state lawmakers to describe the problems in the system and how school districts have to live with the reality of them in the here and now. And Angie Lawrence joins us now from Viroqua. Angie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm great. How are you?
It's nice to have you here. Very well. Thank you very much. So we saw you in this news conference last week talking about the system here, which, again, if you take the party labels out of it and you just look at the system itself, this is not something that you or probably any other school board president would draw up on a napkin someplace and put into effect. And yet you have to learn it and deal with, you know, the realities of the here and now. So let folks know what you were saying last week about general state aid in this new state budget and what it means for school districts like yours.
So number one, we don't even get the budget until October. So that's one of the problems. I mean, school starts, our annual budget starts in July. So I don't know how many businesses run their business by not having a budget until, you know, 5-6 months after their annual year begins. So that's one issue. So when this came out, this recent budget came out and their decisions, it affected a lot of school districts, millions and millions of dollars that they thought that they were going to receive and then they didn't receive. That wasn't the case in our district. We received a little over $8,000 less than what we had anticipated, but it didn't affect us as it did many other schools. What has affected us is the voucher program. So the voucher program, and I can give you an example, the Academy of Excellence in Milwaukee, for example, they are going to receive over $50 million this year from our local taxpayers. Their last year, only 18% of their students were, they only met expectations, 18%. Zero exceeded expectations in language arts. And then in math, only 13% of their students met expectations, with 0% exceeding expectations. I don't know about anybody out there, but if your school district had that type of success or failure, I think that you would be trying to contact the DPI. You would try to get the DPI in there. You would be trying to perhaps close the school because they were incapable of meeting the expectations for children and their educational outcomes. So that's one of the issues. Our school district spent almost $1.2 million from our local taxpayers for the voucher program this last year. So I, once again, you know, we're supposed to provide a high quality of education for every student, and it's just not happening with this voucher program. They have no accountability. They say on the website that they hope that you'll take the test, but if you don't want to, that's all you have to do is send them an email. So they're not even advocating for students to and families to take the test to see how accountable their educational system is in Milwaukee. They also have only 800 of their students actually attend in brick and mortar buildings in Milwaukee. So that means that there's, because they have about 3,700 students in their program, they did last year. And so that means that there's, you know, 2,900 students that are homeschooled, which that was not the intent of the voucher program. And they're not perhaps testing. They don't know if the students are doing the work or if the parents are doing the work. They don't know if the students are taking the test or the parents are taking the test. And there's no accountability for these dollars. So I don't believe that that's our legislators' intent, but that's what's happening. It would be like the Viroqua Area School District saying, we're going to create a voucher school because we have brick and mortar, and we're going to include all of the Amish population, and we're not going to have licensed teachers. We're just going to let them teach, and we're going to let them follow their curriculum, whatever that might be. And then we're going to receive funding for it. And once again, I do not think that's the intent of our legislators, but that is something that could happen that would bring dollars to our school district without us really having to do anything at all. I mean, that's ludicrous. We are not going to do that. But those are the types of things that can happen because of how the voucher program is running. And then you spoke out about referendums. So we have passed two referendi in the last 4 or 5 years. One was brick and mortar. We added a very large technical education component to our school and updated the equipment, which was very much necessary, and then made some repairs that were needed. And that was a $20 million referendum. And we were very, very fortunate to have support of our community. But we did have a failed referendum, and that was operational. And then we had to go back to the community and ask for the dollars again. And that this time when we did pass, it was only for 2 years. So now we're going to have to go to a referendum again in another year to ask our community to assist in funding our school. This costs a lot of money. It's a huge amount of time and effort to explain why we need it. You know, our community, like I said, is very philanthropic. They support schools. But why are we going every 2 or 3 years to referendum? And a big part of it is the state budget. The state budget, you know, only lasts for 2 years. So we never know what's going to happen in the next 2 years. If they're going to take money away from us, if they're going to add a small amount, if it's going to meet inflation. So this has become a huge problem for trying to operate our school districts and prepare for the future. And there's also a bunch of inequity. I mean, I could go on and on forever with this, but it's creating more inequity for students because you're or communities are failing at a very large rate their referendum that they're trying to pass, and your wealthy school districts are passing their referendum. And so that's creating, like I said, a huge separation between the haves and the have-nots. And I believe in every child receiving a very high level of education, and I'm sure all your listeners do as well. But why is our state and all our tax dollars not going to the state, and then all of those dollars are being dispersed equally with every student versus having to go to a referendum and trying to pass something and spending, like I said, a very large amount of money, a very large amount of time and energy, and you don't know if it's going to pass or not?
No.
How do you keep your teachers? How do you keep your programs? It doesn't make any sense.
No, there's such uncertainty as a result of the system. Angie Lawrence is the president of the school board in Viroqua, and we're talking about the many flaws in the system that were frankly only exacerbated by this new state budget. And for all the wisecracks about people talking about, you know, government schools and resources, well, imagine, you know, how much fewer the challenges would be if you weren't skimming nearly $1 billion a year off the top and taking that away and giving it to these schools that are not accountable, that are not nearly as transparent, that are doing things, like you said, where their students are opting out of standardized tests at an alarming rate and leading, therefore, to more referendums. The system, as much as we say there are problems with it, the fact of the matter is the basics are pretty easy to understand. We have a Wisconsin Constitution that says that, you know, education should be supported in as uniform a way as practicable. These are things that we can get back to those standards. There was a Blue Ribbon Commission dedicated to fixing this system with Republicans and Democrats on it, and yet nothing has come of it since. So, Angie, this is just all to say, we can identify the flaws in the system. We can also fix the flaws in the system if we could get lawmakers that wanted to take your concerns seriously.
Well, it's not rocket science. Right. I mean, you're talking about deferring tax dollars, property tax dollars from different communities, having to raise those tax dollars versus the state saying, you know what, we're going to raise taxes and it's all going to go to schools. Not all of the dollars, obviously, but it's going to go to schools so that every child in the state of Wisconsin receives a high quality education. And taxpayers should be able to understand that because they're already paying more in property taxation by passing a referendum. I mean, and schools are fiscally responsible. It's not like we're spending needless dollars to educate our kids. And the budget is not meeting inflation. Our state is becoming funded at a lower rate than all of the others, not all the other states, but it's, I think we're 24th right now. Don't quote me on that, as far as state funding. So we can do way better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was once upon a time when Wisconsin was in or near a top 10 for support of our public schools. Some politicians said that was too much. Well, now, as we're dropping to the middle of the pack and below, you wonder at what point they're going to say, OK, that's enough. We don't want to fall to the very bottom. Well, unfortunately, it seems like some politicians want exactly that as part of the ongoing push to privatization. And it's what we follow in this segment with good people like Angie Lawrence, who serves as president of the Viroqua School Board. Angie, I really appreciate your expertise and your service. Thank you so much for joining us today to share more of the background about it.
There's one more thing. You know, they say that they're funding students that have some type of a disability. Mm-hmm. Yep. But actually, if you look at how their formula works out, we're not receiving hardly any dollars for students with disabilities.
Exactly. More things to examine there. Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Coming up in the next hour, we'll be talking to Earl Ingram of the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast. That and more still ahead. Dr. Kristen Lyerly joining us at 8:35. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lakeland Care is proud to be named one of the top workplaces in Wisconsin for 2025. But what really sets us apart is our commitment to providing personalized support for frail elders and adults with disabilities. Our care teams go above and beyond to help our members live their best lives with dignity and independence. Interested in becoming a member? Visit your local Aging and Disability Resource Center to see if you qualify. To learn more, visit www.lakelandcareinc.com. Lakeland Care. Together, we build better lives.
Olson Legal Group is a local veteran-owned company with offices in Oshkosh and Berlin. It's always the right time to make an estate plan, and Olson Legal Group covers all your bases. From wills, trust, and non-probate transfers to powers of attorney for financial and health care, Olson Legal Group will ensure your wishes are honored and your loved ones are cared for. Plan today for peace of mind tomorrow. Call Olson Legal Group today at 920-230-7020 or olsonlegalgroup.com.
Confidence is knowing you're ready to handle whatever comes your way. That's what it feels like to take on your workday with Cintas. They make sure your AEDs are up to date, your fire extinguishers are tested and inspected, your floor mats are cleaned and delivered, and your workwear looks good, feels good, and is freshly laundered with a Cintas Apparel Plus program. So are you ready to take on today? Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2030. At the recombobulation area, this project is something we've covered extensively, including with an award-winning four-part series called Expanding the Divide. It might be worth revisiting that series and considering how unnecessary and expensive an extra lane is and how in southeastern Wisconsin, we're going to be dealing with construction and delays for the next 8 years in order to shave a few minutes off suburban commute times while the city streets and city problems go ignored once again.
Find all of Dan's work at the recombobulation area.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale for WISS News, and this is Valley Focus. Joining me today, I have Holly Glassford, an environmental health specialist with Winnebago County Public Health Department. And we're going to continue our conversation here. A little bit earlier, we talked with Jane Tebon, who is a public health nurse, and we were talking about National Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Week. But Holly, you're here from a different kind of angle for it, more as to how to help people who may have lead in their home and to find out on that sort of stuff and the environmental parts of it, correct?
Yes, myself and my team in the environmental health section of the health department, we do lots of risk assessments at properties within the county with both elevated childhood lead levels or through our program, the Lead Safe Homes Program.
So tell me a little bit about the Lead Safe Homes Program. How does that, like, if I'm concerned, so I live in a very old house. Let's say I have a question about lead in my home. Mm-hmm. Do I have lead? How would I go about finding out?
So if you live in a home that is built before 1978, we would always just advise that if you are not sure, if you haven't had a test done on any of the paint surfaces in your home, that you should play it safe and assume that that paint could be lead. If it's deteriorating, if it's chipping, peeling, cracking, that is when that paint can aerosolize, and that can cause lead dust in the home, which is a hazard for young children, like Jane explained earlier. So if you have an older home and you have deteriorated paint, it's recommended to clean those surfaces frequently. If you can, try to prevent young children from accessing those deteriorated parts of your home.
Now, you're mentioning deterioration and paint. You know, do you need to remove that paint, or is it simply keeping the area clean?
There's different levels of removing and protecting these paint surfaces. You know, painting over those surfaces, we would call those kind of like interim controls, because it's always possible that that surface can deteriorate again and then expose that bottom layer of paint that is that probably that layer that has some of that lead in it. So, you know, painting over it is a good way to fix that area. But, you know, the next level above that is what we call abatement. So that would be removing those components. So if it's a window, we would take off the window frame and the windowsill and put a new window with a new casing, and all components of the window would be replaced so that there isn't any lead that's left. So that's kind of the difference between, you know, interim controls, just painting over surfaces that have lead, and then replacing components that so that there isn't ever going to be an issue in the future with those components.
Now, that sounds like something that could be kind of expensive and could be one of those things that is just daunting for a homeowner, especially a homeowner that has kiddos running amok. So is there anything that kind of helps with that?
Absolutely. It is definitely an expensive process to go through and remove all of those lead components from your home. Our county currently has a grant from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services called Lead Safe Homes Program. And through the program, we can cover 85 to 100% of the cost of renovations to make the home lead safe, basically taking out any lead hazards, any deteriorated lead paint from the home.
Oh, wow. So you guys would come in and would help with this process?
Yes. So the way that it works is myself and other staff from the department would come, and we would do what's called a risk assessment. So we would go through and take basically a visual look at all the painted components in your house, your walls, your windows, your doors, components in your basement even. Test it with what's called an X-ray fluorescence machine. Basically, it scans the paint and it tells us right away if there is lead in that paint surface. In addition to that, we take dust samples. We want to know if that deteriorating paint had spread throughout your house or on the floors in your house, so we can see if areas need to be cleaned as part of that remediation process. So we do all that during the risk assessment. And then after that, our lead program supervisor, his name is Scott, he will, after everyone has been approved through our program, he will put out bids for contractors to remediate the lead.
If I have a problem, and I think I have a problem with lead, I should call the Winnebago County Public Health Department, say, can I please have a risk assessment?
That is true. There is a couple caveats to it, though. I mean, this
always
is a grant program, so we want to use our funds for the people who are at most at risk and the most in need. So to qualify for the program, the home must have children or pregnant women living in it, or at least visiting frequently to the house. There are other qualifications as well related to income. The first step is we would have you apply to the program.
Okay. So you have to be in the program and enrolled first before the risk assessment.
That's correct, yes. Okay.
On Thursday, October 23rd at 10 a.m., there will be a presentation by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services representatives and the Winnebago County Public Health Lead Abatement Project Coordinator about the Lead Safe Homes Program. who qualifies, how to participate, and how to prevent lead poisoning in children. This will be at 10 a.m. on the fourth floor training space, 112 Otter Avenue in Oshkosh, in the David Albrecht Administration Building. Then after the informational meeting, from 11:15 to 11:45, they will do a tour of a current lead abatement project. So for information on this, please contact the Winnebago County Public Health Department at 920-232-3000. For WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale, and this is Valley Focus.
This is WISS Berlin-Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein-Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump said to be demanding $230 million from his Justice Department for the money that he spent on special counsel investigations, focusing on his first time in office, one related to alleged Russian interference in the 2016 election, the other investigation into the classified documents found at Mar-a-Lago. Drone and missile attacks over Ukraine, killing at least half a dozen people as a meeting that the White House said would be held between President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin has been scrapped.
Just days ago, President Trump said he would be meeting face-to-face with Russian President Putin in the coming weeks, optimistic that they could finally negotiate an end to the war in Ukraine. But now Trump concedes that meeting is not likely to happen after Russia made clear they had no intention of striking a deal. The Kremlin saying, quote, you can't postpone what was not scheduled.
ABC's Mary Bruce. Now this is day 22 of the government shutdown. This is ABC News.